Welcome to the SOAP Bible Study video series from Oak Tree Community Church in South Bend, Indiana. We've been working our way through the Gospel of Mark, and we are finally coming up on Passion Week,
right,
which is chapter 11 out of 16. There's a little bit left to do in chapter 10, but we only have about 3 weeks left in this, I think. So three or four weeks left. So
yeah, we've been working steadily through it, that's for sure. And I even think last week we saw a shift in teaching styles. Jesus had been previously teaching the masses and the people, and he's been, you know, very involved. And now he seems to be pulling back. And there's a couple reasons for that. It was rejection by the Pharisees and the Jewish leadership, not only local, but national, coming in. And we see that where he's starting to teach with parables. And we're going to see a lot of teaching of the disciples this week. But we also have to remember he was up north, and now they're walking down south, 90 miles or so to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of time for teaching. Lots of opportunities for teaching.
Lots of personal one-on-one or one-on-12 time, right?
Yeah, exactly. But he's getting them ready, right? You know, he's going to die in a week. So,
and we even last week we saw things like they were talking amongst themselves, what did this rise again mean? What did this die mean? Going to die mean? They're still not getting
it. So far Jesus has told them twice.
Yeah.
The Son of Man is going to, you know, go to Jerusalem, he's gonna die, he's gonna come back.
Yeah.
And to us it's very plain.
Yeah.
You know, of course, because we know the story.
Right. Yeah.
But they're like, wait, who's the Son of Man? Yeah, what's going on here? You know, they're trying to figure it out.
Why does he keep talking in the third person?
Right, right.
But he's very detailed. I mean, even today, toward the end of chapter 10, we're going up to Jerusalem. The Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and the experts. They will condemn him to death. They will turn him over to the Gentiles.
Yeah,
they will mock him, spit on him, flog him severely, kill him. Yet after 3 days, he will rise again.
Yeah, so we don't have to cover that part, right?
Well, I'm just
that is exactly what happened.
It's exactly what
But that's what you would expect out of him.
Yeah.
But their thought is Messiah.
Yeah.
Messiah's not going to die.
Ew.
How can the Messiah die?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not even on their radar to figure out.
It must be. They were early allegorists. This was all symbolic for something, right?
Yeah. Well, he's teaching them parables. Maybe he's telling them a parable, right? So, oddly enough, in our readings this week, one of the first things that happen is there's the third denial. Or the third prediction that Jesus is going to die and then be resurrected. And the apostles take it about like they did before. James and John, that's fine. But
here's what's important.
When you become the Messiah, can we be at your right hand?
Yeah.
You know, can we get that position of honor?
Yeah.
And this is part of the reason Jesus needs to continue to teach, right? And especially we're in Mark, and we've talked about Mark's all about being servant.
Yeah.
And, you know, being servant. And that's what he stresses with them. Guys, well, first of all, it's not my choice. It's God's choice on what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Second, are you not watching what I'm doing? I mean, I'm serving.
Well, the other disciples got mad.
Well, So Jesus needs to have the same discussion again with the bigger group. Guys, you need to serve.
Yeah.
You know, you're not the, you know, yeah, leading isn't great. You know, it can be fun. But, man, there's a servitude here that they're not picking up.
It was just recently, in fact, it was after one of his previous, you know, predictions of his death and suffering, that they're arguing about who's the greatest, right?
Right.
So, I mean, this is like deja vu almost.
Right. Right. So they're way into the Messiah. Yeah, we're ready. We're on the winning team. We're there. But they're not getting what it's going to take.
Yeah.
And I know we're laughing at them. We do the same thing, don't we? Yeah, well, I'm not going to ask you. But, you know, we're asking, God, can I have this? I want to be in a position of power. I want to be in a position there. And I think his answer back to us would be, yeah, great. go serve for a while.
Yeah. Why do you want it? What, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Where's your heart? Yeah. Right. Your heart's in there, or their heart was definitely in the wrong place.
One of the questions I ask students all the time is, great, that's your passion. That's what you want to do. What are you doing now
to get there?
Yeah. To be in the position where, right, if that were to come up, you know, you can do it, or to prepare for it now.
Yeah.
You know, things don't just fall in your lap, typically.
Yeah. So we're not going to get through everything today, by the way.
What?
Yeah, which is fine, right? We've never said that we're going to cover everything.
Yeah.
So we'll just continue for a while. And okay, if we see a couple of rabbit trails we want to take, that's fine.
There's always a rabbit trail I want to take. We're only going about halfway through chapter 12 this time.
Right.
So.
Right. So we're now in Jericho. And Jericho, famous, right, for walking around and blowing trumpets and the walls fall.
Yep.
But this is just north of the Dead Sea. So what I'd say, about 28 miles from Jerusalem, going kind of a southwest from Jerusalem. So they've probably come maybe 70 miles or so, probably straight down the Jordan River.
Probably, yeah.
There was a couple ways they could go.
Yeah.
On the other side of the Jordan, I think they talk about a lot.
So now this is interesting, and this is worth, I think this is, it's not a rabbit trail, but I think this is worth bringing up because somebody could have this question, right? Because if you read this account, he's going to heal a blind man.
Right.
Right. If you read this account in one of the other gospels, he heals two blind men, or he heals coming out of Jericho, not coming into Jericho, or,
right,
you know, vice versa. And so this is one of those accounts that people use to prove the Bible contradicts itself.
Right.
You can't trust the Bible. Right. Bible contradicts itself.
Well, if you don't know, it does seem like a contradiction.
Right.
Right.
Well, it's actually a fairly easy solution. When Joshua and Israel marched around Jericho, you know, God put walls came tumbling down. God put a curse that said, if anyone tries to rebuild, when he lays the foundation, he'll lose his oldest son. I think when he puts the gates up, he'll lose his youngest son. They'll die, right? And that has actually been tried, and that curse has been found to be true. And so that Jericho is still lying in ruins. But God didn't say we couldn't build a new Jericho.
Just move a couple miles away and rebuild.
Right. Yeah. Right? And not even a couple miles. Yeah, probably just, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And so what happens, I think, when you bring all of the accounts, the gospel accounts together, Jesus, on his way to Jerusalem, that 28 miles or whatever, he has to pass by or pass through both of them. Because they're on the route.
Right. And they're two physically separate places.
They're two physically separate places.
So sometimes he's going to Jericho, sometimes he's coming from Jericho.
Right.
Going to Jericho. I think we see the same thing a lot of times when they go up to Jerusalem.
Yeah.
And you think north, but and then you don't realize it's on a hill.
It's on a hill, right.
Yeah, whenever you're going to Jerusalem, you're physically going up.
So I think what happened is that there are two blind men, and they are, you know, sort of like the in-between. So is he coming out of Jericho or going into Jericho? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, good point.
And the fact that Mark picks on one of them doesn't mean that there weren't two. He's just telling about one of them.
Right. So similarly, when they're leaving Jericho at some point, there's a large crowd with them.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, you know, Jesus is healing a large crowd. But we also need to remember that they're going to Jerusalem, and everybody's going to Jerusalem.
Everybody's going to Jerusalem.
All the males are going to Jerusalem because it's Passover,
right,
and it's a requirement. So you're going to find more traffic. You're going to find more people
So just because there was a huge crowd at the same place with Jesus doesn't mean that that entire crowd knew what was going on.
Right.
Right. Jesus, I think, and this is why I call it the less than triumphal entry for various reasons, but one of them is it wasn't like all Jerusalem is waiting for him to show up and, yeah, you know, he's here. Right. He had a small group of people who actually knew who he was, who were sold on him as Messiah or whatever. They're the ones who were doing the palm leaves and everything. Everybody else around them was like, what's that?
I'll jump on that bandwagon.
Yeah, yeah. Are we doing palm leaves? We're doing palm leaves, you know. Just because somebody laid a palm leaf down does not mean
right.
that they were on, yeah. in so Jesus' I
think,
entourage.
Yeah, so I think when you read this triumphal entry, read it with that in mind. Because in Sunday school, we're always taught it was a huge parade. And certainly it says that there were a number of people coming into the city. I mean, we get that. And then some of the people spread their cloaks on the road or spread branches that they cut. But Jesus enters Jerusalem, and he sat on a colt. Then what does it say? I think it's one of your favorite things or that you've said in the past. You know, they come in, he looks around and they leave.
Yeah.
Right? They go to the temple, they right. look around and then they leave.
Yeah.
It's not a big party.
It's not a big party. Jerusalem does not actually know he's there.
Yeah. And it also means that they weren't socially up high enough to even stay in the city. Right? They had to, they left the city and went back to Bethany, right?
Well, he had friends in Bethany. He had friends in Bethany. So some, I think there's a couple of things. Number one, he had friends in Bethany, so he always had a place to stay there. I think it was probably Mary, Martha, and Lazarus' place. Okay, so they always had a bed. Number two, Jerusalem is packed.
Right.
So even if he did have, even if it wasn't a social standing thing, there's just no room. I mean, because there are people that are coming in from outside of Israel, right? Not just Jews coming from right. within. So every hotel room is booked, right? It's like, in our area here, college football weekend yeah, type thing.
Right.
You can't find a room,
yeah,
exactly. type thing.
Yeah, or a
reservation. Yeah, a reservation at a restaurant and other college towns, definitely do the same thing and stuff. But the third thing is that, and we'll see this as we go through Passion Week, they are trying to trap him, trick him, and kill him.
Right.
So he is...
So it gives him a little break time?
Yeah. So he's going to be in the temple all day teaching. And then at night, because when is something going to happen? Under cover of darkness? They're not going to go into the temple and assassinate him right there. Yeah. They didn't have silencers on guns, and they didn't right. have all the stuff that, that movie technology allows us to do.
I don't think they had guns.
This is what I'm saying. Okay. It'd be a lot more yeah. obvious. They don't have a sniper up on the rooftop over here that can take him out.
Right.
It's more yeah, it's obvious very... to go in there and, stab yeah. him or whatever. So under cover of darkness, he doesn't give them the opportunity.
Yeah, because he's not there.
He's going outside the city and... that sort of thing. So I think there's at least those three reasons why he didn't stay in Jerusalem.
Yeah, good. Good. So then we hit three new scenarios that at first blush just seem to be completely different from each other. But I'm urging everybody to take a closer look at it. The first one is they come out in the morning and they're getting ready to go back into Jerusalem, and there is a fig tree there. And it's the time of year, I believe, when there's figs on the tree, but they're immature or they're not ripe
yeah.
at that point.
But still edible.
Right, but it's that time. But it's that time of year where everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Well, Jesus wants them to be ripe, or seems to want them to be ripe.
I don't yep. think it's that, because he went to the tree. I think he expected the unripe ones, because like yep. I said, they were still edible. They just weren't.
Oh, maybe they weren't even.
They weren't there
they
at
weren't
all.
Even there at all. Okay.
By the time you see the leaves, from what I've yeah. read,
okay.
by the time you see the leaves, the little edible buds should be there, right?
Right.
So it had all the leaves on it. And so he went up to grab a little snack on the way in.
Right.
Right? There was no snack. There weren't even the buds. And so that sets up then the thing that says, it says that it's one thing, but there's no life there.
Yeah.
And then he attaches that to
yeah. Well, it also Israel. Says, so he curses the fig tree. That doesn't mean he cursed it, like a Ten Commandment oath of God type of curse. Means, hey, don't you will never bear fruit again,
right?
Type of deal. And the apostles certainly, or the disciples certainly, heard that. Then it cuts off,
yep.
and we go into the temple.
Go into the temple, yeah.
And it's the cleaning of the temple story. So he driving out the people that are selling and buying in the temple courts, turning over the tables, which that always got me, right? How can he do this and yet he didn't sin? right? But it's not sin. It's his father's house.
Right.
And these were against the Mosaic law, what these people were doing too.
Yeah, because they were cheating.
Right.
People because the actual thing that they were doing, you know, the selling the doves and the selling the animals and foreign currency exchange, none of that was wrong. None of that was wrong because if I'm coming, let's say I'm coming from Turkey.
There needs to be somebody.
I'm coming from Egypt. I'm coming from somewhere else. I'm not bringing a lamb with me that's going to get hurt on the way. It's got to be a perfect sacrifice.
Right.
I'm going to wait until I get there to buy one.
Right.
You know, the problem was under the law, you couldn't cheat people. You had to deal fairly with them. You know, God hates unbalanced scales. We see that throughout the law. We see that in Proverbs. We see that everywhere. These people were cheating their fellow Jews left and right.
Right.
In the temple.
Yeah, in the right, right. And then we also see the chief priests and experts in the law. Now it's not this guy has to go. It's how do we assassinate him?
Yep, yep.
So that's the second part. Now we come back the next day. They've gone back to Bethany, spent the night. Now they're coming back out again. They're going by the same tree, and now the tree is all withered.
Yeah,
down there, and it says, I think it's Peter, right?
Yep.
That points it out. But I think just by seeing that with this tree showing up twice, you got to stop and say,
think about
this
it,
is
right?
odd.
Yeah,
so we need to look deeper at it. And you already talked about you already not that you gave it away, but the idea is. You see this tree, it has leaves, and the expectations are, wow, it's got to have fruit on it.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesus went to look for the fruit, and it wasn't there. Now he goes in the temple. Temple is absolutely gorgeous. The leaves are there, but when he takes a look at it, there's no fruit.
There's no faith, there's no fruit.
Yep. Yeah, nothing is happening there.
Yep.
So, again, it's... I don't know what the right word is, right? But
it is a symbol. It is a symbolism. Symbol. It is a right. setting up, sort of a foreshadowing type thing. But in the Old Testament, a fig tree was one of the illustrations of the nation of Israel.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, representative of the nation of Israel.
Right. And so Jesus is looking at this, and not specifically in Mark. We see this in other Gospels, but he says, "Is there any faith in Israel?"
Right.
Right. You know, Israel looks good. And right. of course, at Passover, like you said, everything is in full motion. Everything's good.
Right.
There's no life there. There's no real life.
And I believe he's especially talking about the nation of Israel, which would be the Jewish leaders and the leadership there, not that individual people couldn't have faith.
Right.
We do see that some in individual people.
Right. But it's like the artificial Christmas tree, right? It looks really, really good, but there's no life.
Right.
You know, it's only the stuff you stick on it that make it look good. Otherwise, it's just,
Right. So now Jesus is back in the temple, and the chief priests, the experts in the law, like you said, now we're trying to figure out how to assassinate him.
Yeah.
So they're going to test him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they start throwing questions that are really tough to answer.
Yeah. Yeah. For the next 3 days, they just throw everything at him that they can.
Yep. Yeah. So the first question, by whose authority are you doing this? Really what they want him to say is, I am God, I am the Messiah, which he has said in the past.
Many times.
And then that's their proof, and they can kill him.
Right.
And Jesus says, before I answer that, I'm going to ask you a question.
Which is perfect rabbinic style. Yep. This is Socratic method, rabbinic style. They do this all the time.
Yep. And he phrased it, I'm going to only ask you one question, so it's not like there's a bunch here.
Yep.
John's baptism, where'd it come from?
Yep.
God or man? So they huddle up. All right, if we say man... everybody's going to get mad at us because everybody here believes it came from God.
He was a prophet of God.
And if we say it came from God, then we have nothing to stand on.
Right.
Because
he told us to repent and that this was the Lamb of God.
Yeah. All right. And then they break and say, we don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I love that answer. Couldn't tell you.
And then, so Jesus says, I'm not going to tell you either. It's beautiful, isn't it? And we see this over and over again, in even jumping ahead, paying taxes to Caesar. Yeah. I'm going to jump there. We can come back if we want to. So they're trying to trick him again. So they go up to Jesus and say, should we pay taxes? It's a very simple question, but man, is it loaded, right? Because they are in Israel, and the nation, the Roman nation, are there with men, armies, in a foreign nation under their ownership. So they have to pay taxes to Rome, which no one is happy about.
Sure.
But if they don't, you know, it's like which side do you go on?
See, but this is also a Messiah question. Can the Messiah condone another
a foreign country within your own country?
Yeah. This is a messianic question too.
Yeah. So Jesus, of course, says, "Do you have a coin?" by that way, a Roman coin.
Yeah.
Somebody. And I love somebody brings it and gives it to him. Whose picture's on it?
Yep.
Yeah. Caesar. And then give unto Caesar what's Caesar's. Give unto God
what's God's. What belongs to God.
Yeah. Beautiful thing. So there's a number of these questions where they're trying to trick him by any means, and he comes back with some beautiful answers.
So let's flip it around a little bit, because that's from their perspective, right? They're trying to trap him. They're trying to trick him. Let's flip it around the other side. Because before an animal could be sacrificed, especially, say, for Passover, it had to be inspected from nose to tail, from head to toe, to make sure that it was perfect, without blemish, no fault in any way, before it could be the sacrifice. And so from Jesus' perspective, he was putting himself on full display for 3 days, saying, examine me.
Ask me an exam. Oh, nice.
Give me a throw everything. I'm sure you've said that before, but
I forgot.
Because he knew at the end of the week he was going to be sacrificed as the Lamb of God. And he gave them every opportunity for 3 days, 3-4 days. And they couldn't find any fault with him. He was truly the perfect, unblemished lamb. So that when he went on the cross, he was spotless.
Yeah.
And they tried everything that they could. And the Pharisees gave up, and the Sadducees tried, and then they gave up, and the Pharisees had got their second wind, and they came back, and we see this in the next couple of chapters. And at the end, by the end of the time on Thursday, at least in Matthew, it says that no one dared ask him any more questions. They were done. They had exhausted everything.
Right. And he answered to the fullest.
Yeah.
And really, questions that anybody else would have more than struggled with.
Yeah.
You know, should I pay taxes? There is no, could the right answer possibly be?
Yeah.
You know, if I say, yes, you need to pay taxes, now I'm a bad Jew.
Right.
If you say no, now I'm going to get killed by the Romans.
Rome on me. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's all of these things. And like you said, we can't look at every little detail. He gives a parable here that is literally, I mean, it's a slap in the face of the Jewish leader. They knew that it was in front of everybody. You know?
I really liked it. The people got it, right? The people were laughing. There's a line in there that says something along those lines. So the people understood exactly what was happening there from the standpoint of what this parable was against the nation of Israel.
Yep. So they left him, and the Sadducees asked about the marriage and the resurrection and all that, which is where our reading this week this session ends.
Right. And I think, like you were saying, it's a great point from that story that they're just making it up.
Yeah.
Now, and in fact, it even says that, right? It's the Sadducees came, and oh, by the way, they don't believe in the resurrection.
They don't even believe in the resurrection.
Yeah. And they start off with, you know, seven wise guys.
Yeah, right. So in the resurrection, what happens? Like, you don't even believe in the resurrection. Right. Why do you care? Right.
But he doesn't take that route.
Right.
Right. And I think he gives us some good information about what may happen in heaven, too.
I think a little bit
of insight.
I think one of the things that we have to make sure that we're very careful about, especially in this section,
and this bleeds over into next week's reading as well, mm-hmm. you know, as we go through Passion Week, is we want to make sure we're not building our doctrine totally on these sections, because they're asking him very pointed, specific trick questions, and he's answering very pointed, specific way.
Right.
There are definitely principles to glean here. There's doctrine that we can build out of here, but we cannot, you know, like this whole thing on, in marriage in heaven, whatever. Yeah. We're going to build our whole doctrine about that out of this one verse taken out of context. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So we have to be very careful with that. I'm not saying you're doing that. Next time we'll finish up chapter 12.
There's 13, some great stuff in there still,
and get into chapter 14 a little bit, and then we're running really close then to the end of the book here. So chapter 14 is actually the longest chapter in the book, I think. So it's going to take a little bit of extra time
to get in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, really a lot of stuff in here. Lots of places. Yeah. Oh yeah, always.
Well, and it seems stuff. Like they're all like each one of these are totally separate from each other. They're not. They just come together.
Yeah.
And they build on one another too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So look for that.
Yep. Watch for all of those things. And if there's something that we glossed over and you're like, oh, I wish you would have spoken to that, you know, shoot us a message. We'll respond. We won't necessarily do a whole video, but we'll respond to you if you have a question or something that you thought was really, really interesting that you wanted to share. Let us know. We love to hear that stuff from you. Otherwise, we'll see you next time as we just keep working our way through the Gospel of Mark, getting closer to the actual crucifixion and the end of Passion Week.
Right.
And we'll be there in a couple of weeks.